From the Midas and Roseburg studios, KQEN weather in the Umpqua Valley, going to be sunny today with a high of 69. Increasing clouds tonight down to 50. Tomorrow, 100% chance of rain, high of 64. Showers likely Wednesday night, slight chance of showers on Thursday. And then Friday, back to sunshine and 73. That looks to be the warmest day in a while. 58 degrees now. And KQEN News Time, 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, and thanks for being here today. Certainly a busy time and lots of information, lots of conversations to have on Inside Douglas County. State Senator Floyd Przanski joining us again. Floyd, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Thank you, Kyle. Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
So overall, give us your evaluation of the governor's actions in related to the COVID-19 situation so far.
Overall, I've been pleased with her taking the leadership and really directing us to follow the science and the medical experts as to how we can reduce the risk of infection to many people. The executive orders that she's entered seem to be appropriate from my perspective. As you know, when she declared a state of emergency, it placed her in a position to basically be able to start doing multiple things that normally may take a little bit more engagement of the other two branches of government. Not that she can overstep into those branches, but at the same time, she does have a lot of authority as the head of the executive branch, and she's demonstrating that she's willing to make decisions, many tough decisions, as to what is best for us to be able to move forward and get beyond this crisis that we find ourselves in.
A lot of people are saying the Employment Department website is just not keeping up with the demand from those trying to apply. I've heard about some calling in and said they've never been able to get through. What's your reaction? What should be done in the short term?
Well, they're trying to just ramp everything up. As you can imagine, I was looking to see if I could put my finger on this briefing we got yesterday regarding how much impact the unemployment has really caused for the Employment Department. They have shifted, and my understanding, they're in the process of hiring close to 400 individuals, and some of them are being shifted from other duties within the Employment Division. Others will be new hires to actually take on the load. The other concerns, unfortunately, is because a lot of this is tied to federal money coming into the state, a lot of that guidance that we need in, as to what the rules and regulations are for the money that's coming in from the federal government, including unemployment, has not been fully vetted and put out. So some of the individuals who will be receiving relief, such as self-employed, independent contractors, those in the gig economy, we still don't have the guidance, at least as of this morning, I should say last night, as to exactly how those are going to be rolled out. And so it's unfortunate that the federal government and giving has not, let's say, expressly stated exactly how and when the resources will be made available, and ensuring that we as a state are actually following through with what are the parameters are to get relief out as quick as possible. So it's not to pass the buck. It's just that we need to get a little more clarity so we can get people up and going. And as you can imagine, with the thousands of individuals in Oregon that have now filed or are in the process of filing for unemployment, the current staffing that we had prior to March 8th just is not adequate enough. And so there has been those decisions to make that have been made, I should say, to actually bring more people in and working. But I will tell you, that's probably the number one call that I'm getting into the office, are as individuals who have attempted to go through the mill of getting onto unemployment and getting the relief that has been promised for, through Washington, D.C., as well as what we're attempting to bundle together with the state resources and revenues that we have access to.
And for those that are self-contractors, people in a lot of different areas under that umbrella, when the CARES Act was passed, that was one of the things Senator Wyden pointed out in a conversation that said, under normal circumstances, those folks can't apply for unemployment. They can now, but yet it seems like the technology is still, weeks later, not not caught up to the legislation.
It's very true. I mean, it really does show. One of the things that I've been frustrated with in the state over the years that I've had the opportunity to serve in the legislature is how antiquated our systems are, in a sense, when it comes to electronics. And apparently the employment division's mainframe computer systems that they use are very old, very dated, and they're not as efficient and as quick as they need to be. Plus, it just takes the staffing level that you need to actually be able to process that much. So, you know, those are things that I would say are really important for us to be able to, get a handle on and a grip to actually be able to have people be able to call into a phone number that they've been told to call. I mean, I've had people that have said they've been on the call for 2 hours, only to get cut off and disconnected. And that has to be extremely frustrating for anyone, especially individuals who are trying to make ends meet.
In the long term, what will it take to get the state agency websites updated to meet these modern demands?
Well, at this point, it's just basically staffing and the expertise to actually be able to accommodate what needs to be done through that system. The concern for me, which I've not been able to verify, is the system so antiquated that it's not going to be able to get up to what we would consider a level of certainty and being able to process as quickly as possible. So this is, again, shows where we're not making necessarily the investments on an ongoing basis for the infrastructure of state government, that when you have something like this that is such a magnitude, it really does demonstrate the shortcomings that we have.
For the business community, what is the state doing to help? We've got an increasing number of businesses starting to say they're not sure they're going to survive this situation much longer, which can lead to some longer, some economic pain additionally for the long run, not what we're dealing with now.
No, it's very true. I've been participating out of Eugene. The mayor's office has been running a weekly check-in for local small businesses, and I've had the opportunity to sit in on those four different weeks that we've had this ongoing and hearing from the businesses as to their inability to access a lot of the funds that are supposed to be there. And as you probably have heard from others, when the CARES money was being made available, there was such a rush to get in line to actually apply for it. Many people weren't even able to get the applications in time before the first wave of money had been pretty well committed and allocated. We do have, from my understanding, from Washington, D.C., I've heard that there is, in the wrap-up moments of having another relief bill. This one is supposed to be more geared to small businesses. It's unfortunate that the first definition of the CARES Act defined small businesses being 500 employees or less. And as you can imagine, for the vast majority of people that we would associate as being small businesses, they're probably no greater than 50 individual employees, maybe something in that range. So having that type of impact of allowing that many larger businesses to actually get in position, and in some cases, because of their relationships with their bankers, may have gotten preference in getting their forms filled out and processed.
For all the pain going on in the business community right now, some said the state should look at suspending the implementation of the CAT tax during this COVID-19 pandemic.
That's correct, and that's one of the things that I've also have questioned, and it's not in the sense of eliminating the tax, it's delaying it. For the last week and a half to 2 weeks, I've been working and attempting to have direct communications not only with the governor and the governor's staff, but also looking at how we can ensure through this process that we're going to get the relief for individuals. And so there's been, for the estimates on first quarter, for payments that are anything that's due for 2019 has been delayed. The issue is moving forward for 2020, and that's where the CAT Act comes in, the corporate activity tax. And what I've requested is that we look at delaying the requirement for the filing for at least 30 days, if not 60 days. That would get us into the end of June before that would be due to be filed. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, I think small businesses that are impacted by the CAT tax, and we have to realize that not all of them will be and never would be because of the revenue that they create doesn't reach that threshold. But for those that do, this is just one more burden of trying to meet a deadline, and the deadline is April 30th. So that's why I've been working the last week and a half trying to get the governor and the governor's staff to rethink the position they're in, and then also my own caucus. I've requested a week ago that we have a caucus meeting. We are scheduled, or we're supposed to schedule one this week, and I've been told that my request will be one of the agenda items. And what I'm trying to do is say, let's give a break here. Let's have a little bit of a relief from the April 30th date. And I personally would like for it to go out to 60 days. Now, the pushback to that is that, of course, as we know, the CAT tax is really geared for education funding, K through 12. And the concern is that if we delay the reporting and the collection of those taxes, that that's going to actually have a impact on what decisions school boards have already made as to hiring, buying new equipment, for being able to utilize for better education in the classroom. So I understand that concern, but I also believe from the modeling I've heard is that the amount that we would be impacted is going to be a small amount compared to the free fall that we're still in as the state revenues forecast is showing, demonstrating somewhere between a $2 to $5 billion shortfall that we're going to be experiencing. And so this smaller amount does not seem to be, to me, as pressing as needing to have it the first day that it's due on the 30th. Now, one other thing I will say is that for those who are, in fact, required to file, they need to do the best they can as to coming up with what that number of revenue would be. There are supposed to be no penalties assessed against anyone for their first reporting, from what we've been told through the Department of Revenue for the state. But I'm still kind of scratching my head and wondering, why can't we delay this for 60 days?
Other governors, including Cuomo in New York, I saw this morning, they're beginning to talk about opening their states and regions, not on a statewide basis, as they compare health data that varies from point to point. With COVID-19 in Oregon appearing to be a bigger issue in the northern Willamette Valley, Salem, Portland, west side of Portland, east side of Portland, down the valley a bit, is it reasonable to suggest the governor might look at opening rural areas sooner following the benchmarks that were outlined earlier?
Absolutely. Our staff and her team is already looking and at those options as to how we can start opening up the state. And I would expect that it's not going to be a one opening for all as compared to having a more strategical perspective based on what the science and the medical experts tell us as to how we can potentially open up more areas geographically that have not been as adversely impacted as some of the more hot areas. But at the same time, even when we open it, you have to, for us to do that, we have to have the testing availability. We need to have the tracking. So when you do have a case of an individual that is infected, that you can track their movements, who they've had contact with. Because where we've seen success around the world, by having that type of activity and pressure and determining who has been infected, who they've come in contact with, you can actually open up a lot more of your state by isolating out those individuals and not having a blanket stay-at-home requirement or order.
And a lot of people seem to be saying, the experts that we're seeing in various vantage points, that even as things begin to open up in some locations, that all the social distancing measures, the changes people say at grocery stores, things like that, that's going to be something around for quite a while.
Absolutely. I don't see how we can't not accept some of the obvious at this point. Because we, on the federal side, did not have the testing in place and having the criteria and protocols set before we have had the impact of the infections within and around the country, we're going to be stuck with this model for some time because we're now basically needing to be able to identify and isolate out those individuals who are in fact infected. and isolating them will allow for more free and travel. But the reality is, when you have people free association and moving around, which we want them to be able to do and get back to work and have more of a social life that they than what they have now, the reality is you're going to have some obstacles that you're going to still have to deal with, and that is spreading of the infection. And that's why it's so important for the testing to be up to the level that we can actually have testing done and have quick turnaround and results, and actually being able to then take the appropriate measures that are necessary to isolate those individuals out. But clearly, I think as we go into the grocery stores and we see the PPE that's being used, whether it's masks, some type of plexiglass shield, or whatever it is, and us wearing masks when we're in public and keeping social distances, we will not be controlling the virus. The virus will continue to control us, as we've heard from the medical experts.
I've been reading a lot about rural health. There was an article I saw this morning from a hospital back east that was finally closing. This was kind of the nail in the coffin for them. We've heard locally, Mercy Medical on track to lose $9 million this month. And if facilities can show they've got the needed PPE equipment, is there a scenario here as things begin to look at being opened back up that the medical facilities can get back to the rest of healthcare?
I hope so. I mean, the reality we do know, and you're correct, and we've seen this in other parts of Oregon as well, where rural hospitals have had the advantage of being able to take on a lot of the quote-unquote elected surgery, which is really, to be very frank, their bread and butter as to revenue coming in the door. And because of the shortage on the PPE, personal protection equipment, not being available for the needs of under the pandemic, those facilities have in fact been closed. And you look at where else it's hit. I mean, even in the veterinary and dental, how they've also been impacted. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts here, but clearly if we can get the supply of PPE up to the standard that we need to be able to have some of the previous practices move forward again, we should do that. And clearly, I hope that we are continue to put more opportunity and getting more PPE. I'm really pleased and happy. I haven't been able to track as closely in Douglas County, but I do know that there's been some organizations there as well as in Lane County who have basically volunteered time to help make masks and even to the medical grade so they can be used. And we also know that the state prison system is now producing masks to be used not only within the institutions but also outside. And they're waiting for getting sources to get the material necessary to make medical-grade masks. So once we get to those levels of being of have that type of production, I believe that we'll start seeing a lot of areas that have demonstrated that they'll have the protocol necessary to address individuals coming into their environment to ensure that they're not reinfecting or bringing the virus back into areas where you want it not to be, so you can actually perform these type of medical practices. That's not the correct term. Procedures.
Right. And last week I talked to a couple of doctors, and one of the things they talked about is even the definition of elective care. I mean, this is not liposuction or something like that. Oftentimes you have people that where the surgery doesn't have to be done that moment, but as they wait and they wait, their conditions are declining, and there's some potential for folks to have some life-impacting situations change when they're not able to get this so-called elective surgery.
Well, that's true. I think that's one of those situations. I think on the medical community, they have to determine what, from my perspective, they should be the ones deciding on what is medically needed, what is not needed. And as you're saying, I mean, there have been a number of individuals who I know personally who have been directly impacted by those decisions, including individuals who have cancer that were scheduled for certain procedures to occur that have been put on hold. And clearly, if you're the individual recipient that needing that service, the last thing you want to have to do is wait, wait, and wait.
I'm curious, you, of course, are in Eugene. You're in Florence some as well. What are you seeing in terms of mask wearing out in retail establishments? Is it becoming more common there?
Yes, it is. I will say that we're trying to here at home stay put as much as we can. I am getting out on a daily basis just to get a little exercise in on a solo basis. But when we are making trips, every time, which is about every 10 days to 2 weeks, I'm seeing more and more individuals that are masking up. Susie, my wife, has actually made a couple of homemade different patterns of masks for both of us that we're actually using the coffee filter approach for giving you a little bit better protection, just cloth. But the reality is, no matter what you do to protect you from actually projecting out any type of moisture outlets and breathing, that could, in fact, the ironic part of this is how many individuals could and actually are infected without knowing it because they don't have the symptoms.
I'm going to go back. Go ahead.
So that's the issue of why you really want to be masked up, is that you may be feeling great. And one of my colleagues, they thought he came down with the COVID-19. It turned out it wasn't, but he was showing some of the symptoms. At least that's what got him going. And then all of a sudden realized that it was something else. And clearly they were able to address that. But when you don't protect yourself, you're not protecting others.
Let's go back to the technology aspect for a moment. Should an infrastructure be put in place so the legislature can meet virtually with public access to watch, et cetera?
Well, that's what we're looking at and how we're trying to go forward. This week, and it has not been publicly announced, but my understanding is that they're trying to have an e-board, emergency board meeting later this week. And I know they were projecting for tomorrow or Thursday. At this point, I've not seen any notices come out. What they will want to do is be able to ensure that the general public, even though they may not be able to be in the room, would have access through some type of video feeds, etc., to be able to observe and participate. We're looking at some of the issues, and you're asking about the executive orders that the governor has under her executive power. She does have the ability not only to bring us in under what would consider a regular special session, but also one that's under Article 10-A of the Oregon Constitution, on a catastrophic disaster special session. That is something that was put in on the books by the voters in 2012 after the 9/11 situation to ensure that if we were not able to get all of our members intact into Salem, how we can continue to run businesses. So that's another approach that the governor's looking at.
Well, a lot going on, a lot to talk about, and we'll cover more in our next visit. State Senator Floyd Prezansky, representing parts of Douglas and Lane County. Thanks for being on with us again today.
Kyle, thank you very much. Have a good day and be well.
1258, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.